Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country, writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years, Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week, we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of These Parts. I'm your host, Vince McNally, and not with me this week, as he usually is my brother, Elliot McNally. That's right, listeners, you're listening to a These Parts first. We're going host solo on this episode in this town because in the run-up to RandCon, we are juggling a lot of responsibilities. Namely, my brother is in Rudyard's Hill, Georgia. And if you astute listeners at home are paying attention, you'll notice that this is the official reveal of the home of RandCon 2016. We're very excited. And Elliot is on the ground in Rudyard's Hill taking care of catering specifications, a lot of demands for the venue and for the menus at the venues. In fact, we're working with a company called Venue Menu. That's V-E-N-U with a tilde, M-E-N-U with a tilde. They have been very helpful. My brother is very demanding. The food he wants to be served can't be any meat. Can't be any carbohydrates, can't be anything that could theoretically be drawn in a way that would personify it. So because like a vegetarian pizza, for instance, the mushrooms could be a little mouth and the olives could be little eyes. We can't serve that. So there are a lot of specifications, and we thought it best if Elliot was actually there with the caterers to make sure everything went smoothly. So what that means is you've just got me this week. But don't worry, you won't have to listen to me talk alone because we have a very special guest for this very special town. Before we get into it, let's put it on the map. The town we're in this week might be familiar to you movie buffs out there who are fans of a certain Jim Carrey drama vehicle called The Truman Show. Indeed, this town is called Truman, Indiana. One central townsperson features as a focal point for an ongoing reality TV series of which he is not aware. Everyone else in the town are actors. And with me today to help put this town on the map is one of those actors. Before we do it, could you please introduce yourself, sir?
G'day, Vince. My name is George Lazenby. Your listeners may know me from portraying James Bond super spy 007 in the film On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Mr. Lazenby, I have to tell you, it's an absolute honor. I'm a huge Bond buff, seen all the movies. You're one of the most underrated Bonds ever to take the stage.
I appreciate that, Vince.
And it's so good to me to see you finding real meaningful work outside of Hollywood. Does me good as a fan. And I'm a little bit starstruck to have you here on the show. What a replacement for my co-host. And if I could be so honored as to humbly ask you to put Truman, Indiana on the map for us.
I will do just that, and there it is.
Expertly done with a spy's touch. Mr. Lazenby, what's it like being an everyday actor on the clock 24/7 to be in such an interesting and, dare I say, controversial project?
I like to think of it as the ultimate actor's challenge, Vince. Being on the clock, as you said, 24 hours a day is strenuous for anyone, not so much me. But any normal actor, I would think. Being James Bond has prepared me for a lot, but this is sort of the ultimate role. I actually got this role from being James Bond, if you could believe it.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble. Do you want to walk me through the process of how that worked?
Well, of course, you know that everyone in Hollywood knows each other, I'm sure.
That's a well-documented fact, yes.
So the show, it's called Been There, Done That, and it stars Ben Davis as the titular character. And the person who conceived of the show, no one's ever seen or talked to him. His name is the architect. He designed the town that we live in. It's under a big dome. And he, of course, he needed to plan everything. He has been with Ben since birth. But he needed a head writer. And the writer he chose was probably the most prestigious Australian writer in Hollywood. Her name is Tits Dunkwill.
That's T Tits Dunkwell.
Oh, I'm sorry. Australian names aren't, you know, conventional American names. So we have Tits Dunkwell. She's worked extensively with Cock McKenna and Ariola Ferguson. But she actually wrote all of James Bond's most iconic lines. So she wrote Bond, James Bond. She wrote Shaken, Not Stirred. She wrote, I'll Have What She's Having.
That was a James Bond line.
Yep, and she wrote Party on Wayne. She wrote that one.
Maybe I'm not familiar with those specific scenes, but it sounds like there was a star-studded cast coming to the program already. So been there, done that. For our listeners who aren't familiar with the concept, do you want to run through exactly how it works?
Sure, of course. So Tits Dunkwell hired me after my work on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I was brought over here. I've actually been a recent addition to the cast. The show has obviously been going for about 30 years, the entirety of Ben's life. But recently, as he starts a family and as he continues his journey career-wise, he needed a mentor. So who I play is an old man who usually he finds down by the park feeding ducks by the pond. His name is Seymour Millman, and he goes to Seymour for advice, for, you know, lady troubles, all that sort of thing. And it's interesting because on camera, an Australian accent sounds like a British accent, and that's how I got the job as James Bond in the first place.
It's true what they say, the camera adds 10 pounds and changes your accent from Australian to British. Yes.
So Ben comes to this wise old British man for advice. I'm usually in pounds and pounds of makeup, fat suit, you know, mutton chop sideburns and a bowler hat. But he comes to me and we've had a lot of great conversations over the years.
Well, that's stunning. And it answers preemptively my question. Weren't you worried that Ben, the titular character, would recognize you from your storied work as America and Britain's greatest super spy? But it turns out that you're covered in lots of makeup, a bowler hat, very verbose mutton chops, and a bristly mustache.
It's interesting because Tits Dunkwell actually remembered this costume because I wore it to the first audition for James Bond, and they thought that I would look better just as my normal self being a model.
Do you mean to tell me that you wore a 60-pound fat suit to your first audition as James Bond?
Yes, I thought it would be an interesting dimension to the character, you know, add a little more spice to it. Of course, I was the first James Bond after Sean Connery. I wanted to mix things up a bit. And of course, I was the only James Bond actor to ever have one film. And I'll tell you why that is, Vince. I was able to cover all of the breadth and depth that an actor would have to go to playing James Bond. I had humor, I had drama, I had danger. And the reason so many other James Bond actors have a litany of movies is because they only get to one characteristic per film. I was able to do all of them.
You're truly a legend of the silver screen, Mr. Lazenby. And, you know, I'll take this opportunity once again to thank you for joining us on the show. Taking a day out of your busy schedule as a round-the-clock Seymour Millman, is that correct?
Correct.
Sensational. Well, I'm so excited to dive into the meat and potatoes of this episode. So without further ado, let's get to a segment we call Giving Them the Business. Now, Seymour, in this fictional world...
I appreciate you calling me by my character's name. It helps me stay in character.
I was instructed by your agent to do so. But, you know, from here on out, I'll try to be faithful to that and keep my fanboying under control.
You know, George is fine or James Bond. I respond to her either.
Well, Seymour, it must be that a lot of world building needs to go into the creation of this reality TV program. Sure. After all, Ben will need to interact with the surroundings in a way that makes him feel like he's actually living in the real world. So to that end, there must be businesses that crop up and have actual entrepreneurial lifespans here within the fictional town of Truman. Could you talk for a minute about the people who make their actual living, not just as an actor, but also as an entrepreneur here?
Sure. Well, as I said, we're in a giant dome. We are in Indiana. That's factual. But people have to uproot their lives and come here and live here for their entirety, or else Ben will become suspicious. So they have to leave their families in many cases and start these businesses. The first one I want to give a shout out to is a catering service, craft services called Venue Menu. Have you ever heard of them?
Yeah, you know, Seymour, I'm a huge fan of theirs. We're working with them ourselves, actually.
Oh, great. They really provide all of the food in town. They are constantly creating amazing, exquisite dishes for Ben and the rest of the cast to eat. There is an entire street devoted to the craft services table that we have to steer Ben away from, because the actors, when they're on break, they go over and eat snacks. And so if he were to see the entire citizenship of the town congregating and eating, he would get suspicious.
It stands to reason that he would. Now, talk to me about a little piece I read in People magazine where the writers wrote in a shellfish allergy for Ben because seafood is so difficult to get to Indiana in a timely basis.
Mm-hmm. Sure. He can't eat seafood. He can't eat peanut butter sandwiches. We have some actors with severe peanut allergies, and we can't have them around peanuts. The grip operator, he just doesn't like M&Ms. So we decided to be accommodating of everyone, and so Truman doesn't know what an M&M is.
Yes, I see. One of the few cities in the country where sixlets are still alive and well.
Yep.
Well, this is already answering a lot of my questions. What about recreation for you, the actors? You're only, quote-unquote, on for a few minutes a day when Ben is actually interacting with you. The rest of the time, you're free to live your lives independently. Is that correct?
Yes, we can. There's actually a great shop in town called Standee By Me, and they make life-size cardboard cutout standees of all the actors in town. So when we want to take a break, they just prop you up and you can go and do as you please. And Ben will just interact with that cardboard cutout as if he's a real human.
That's very practical. What about for your stunts? I remember watching an episode a couple of years ago when you had just been introduced to the cast, and it required you doing a bit of a pratfall to round out your character's humorous, oafish, laughable qualities. You tumbled down quite a large hill here in Truman. Was that mm-hmm. you yourself, Seymour, or did you have someone stand in for you?
No, that's all me. I like to do all my own stunts based on the James Bond film I was in. We actually had a similar stunt in my James Bond film where I fell down a hill. So I don't know if you're familiar with On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but it is the one James Bond film where James Bond is married.
Is that true? Is that so?
Yes, it's true. They did a survey and they asked people, what did they think was missing from James Bond's dangerous, promiscuous, fun-loving lifestyle? And people said a wife. And so we had to do this amazing stunt where my wife and I were tumbling down the hill trying to evade some Russian spies. So there's a lot of scenes in Truman, Indiana that I volunteer myself, even to be stunt doubles for other people falling down hills.
Wow. Well, Seymour, I'll break character for a minute and say, Mr. Lazenby, you are the consummate professional. My respect for you just grows and grows.
I actually also have my own sound effects guy for when I have to do these stunts. He was the backup xylophonist for the Beatles, and whenever I have to sneak around on set, he always has a xylophone timing it to each of one of my tiptoes.
That must create a very evocative scene.
Yes, he was with me on set of James Bond, and I brought him over to the States across the pond with me because I just thought he was so great. Charlie Sullivan, he's sitting right here. Vince, I dare you to name any Beatles song, and he'll tell you if he was the xylophonist on it.
Penny Lane.
No, I actually wasn't. I was sick that day, and George ended up being the xylophonist on that one.
How about Abla Di Abla Da?
John just overdubbed the 19 xylophone part in that one. He didn't need me that day, so there wasn't really much work for the Beatles, but George was kind enough to bring me over.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us all the same.
I can demonstrate. And Charlie, why aren't you playing the xylophone? I'm tiptoeing around the room right now, as you can see, Vince.
Quite acrobatically, I might add, for our listeners who can't see this themselves.
Oh, well, I didn't bring my xylophone today.
Charlie, that's literally your entire job. Well, I guess it would mess up some audio recording in here in the RV.
Hey, I'm not put out for it, Seymour. So, I mean, thanks anyway. It's always interesting to see, even secondhand, how actors do their job. What I want to talk about is a little establishment I spent some time at.
Sure.
As our regular listeners will know, I'm not one to shy away from a beverage at the end of a day. And I was in your town's soccer pub, Bennett Like Beckham, and I was enjoying a tall pint. And I noticed a lot of off-duty actors kind of kicking around, to turn a phrase, in that tavern. Do you ever frequent it?
I do, and we always have to keep it out of sight from Ben because he doesn't understand why there would be a bar whose theme is soccer and him. So there's a lot of things like that in town that are Ben related. There's a whole Ben upholstery shop that creates different Ben pillows and such, and we have to steer him away from things like that and things like the soccer bar.
Has he ever, I mean, not to kind of take the wind out of some of the show's more iconic moments, but has he ever come close to discovering part or whole of the truth?
Oh, no, no. Whenever there is an inkling that he might be getting close, we would just use some sort of mind control serum or knock him out, and then it usually clears things up. And doctors say there aren't any long-term side effects that they have noticed so far. But there's plenty to keep him busy around town. A lot of Hollywood has donated different sets from other shows. So we have the Cheers Bar. We have the Peach Pit from 90210. And of course, he's never seen any of these shows, so they're new to him and they're fun for us too.
I noticed that Central Perk was located kind of downtown Truman. Now, it's missing, of course, the play on words for Central Park, obviously, but he wouldn't even know that park exists.
Yes, he's not really that keen on too much outside of Indiana.
Wow, this has been fascinating. Are there any shops that you want to give a shout-out to before we move along?
Really, I think we've covered it. There's Venue Menu, of course, that's on 3rd. And there's also the super secret Hilltop Observatory, but I'm sure your listeners don't really want to hear about that too much, do they?
En contraire, do you want to give us a few words, kind of unpack that for us?
It's not too much of a shop, but it's purported to be where the architect spends most of his time. Of course, no one's ever seen or heard of him, but he just apparently monitors the whole town from up there and sometimes whispers to Truman as he's sleeping.
Do you mean to say he whispers from afar, from his perch atop the hill?
Yes, he will give us set direction.
Oh, so he whispers into a sort of headpiece.
No, there's microphones all around Truman, and if we're talking to Ben and we're doing something that he doesn't really like, he'll just be able to pop in and say, maybe you should do something else.
Oh, I see.
Ben doesn't really suspect it.
This has been very enlightening. And I've learned a lot already, but something occurs to me, Mr. Lazenby, and it's that our listeners might have a few specific questions of their own. Let's find out if that's true in a segment we call Wouldn't You Like to Know? So listeners, as you know, Wouldn't You Like to Know is your opportunity every week to write in with your specific questions, concerns, and intrigues about the town that we're staying in. We have time to read 3 on the air each and every week. This week is no different, and allow me to begin. Seymour. The first question comes from Hollywood, California.
Oh, that's great.
And it's written by Lacey Dunwood. Lacey would like to know, hey, I'm a huge Been There, Done That fan and have been since I was a little girl. Well, that's great.
That's great to hear. As a recent addition to the cast, I know that these actors work so hard and have their entire lives.
I couldn't agree more, Seymour. She goes on to write, I'm incredibly impressed by the subplot that the show put on in the late 70s, namely the movie within a show that eventually broke out to become a real world movie called Deliverance. Isn't it true that there were a lot of complications involved with setting a film that's supposed to be set in Georgia in the fictional town of Truman, Indiana?
Sounds like Lacey's a bit confused with a different film.
P.S. I loved Mr. Lazenby in that film. Now, Mr. Lazenby, it's true that you weren't actually in Deliverance.
It's correct. Tits Dunkwill, I think, worked on that one, though.
Tits is a prolific contributor throughout Hollywood, so it doesn't surprise me one bit. Now, where do you think Miss Dunwill got her wires crossed? Because to clarify to those at home, Deliverance is a movie that strictly exists in the real world. It doesn't exist in the world of Truman, does it?
No, it does not. You know, she may have gotten confused because we used a lot of the extras from Deliverance in our town. They were being displaced out of Georgia and they needed parts. So, for instance, the guy who runs Standy By Me is the inbred boy from the dueling banjos scene.
I see. And I guess this explains the kind of out of place and anachronistic bayou region here in Truman.
Yes, to make them feel more comfortable, we brought up the river that they went down in the film. Also, Burt Reynolds is the mailman.
Burt Reynolds, the actor, works as the mailman here in, well, that explains why he's famous for only being able to record movies on Sundays. Wow, I'd never really put those two together. Talk about your well-kept secrets. That's just amazing. And I think it dovetails nicely into our next question. Do you have that in front of you?
I do. This one comes from Adam in Helena, Montana.
Adam, thanks for writing.
Adam says, "Dear George, I am a huge Bond fan. I was wondering, who is your next favorite James Bond after you, of course?"
Though it's not a Truman-specific question, I think always interesting to hear an actor's take on the biz. So what do you think, Mr. Lazenby?
You'd actually be surprised with its relation to Truman, Indiana.
I'm about to be.
My next favorite Bond actor is Daniel Craig, and that's because I discovered him right here in Truman, Indiana.
You discovered Daniel Craig in Truman, Indiana.
Yep, that's right.
Well, tell me about that story. That sounds fascinating. Well,
there's a local hotel in town that Daniel was working as a bellhop for. Of course, because Ben lives in this town, there's not much need for a hotel. No one would ever come visit him, and he would never stay at one. So Daniel, I realize, was this just untapped talent waiting there. He had no lines, but he had a white tuxedo. And so I talked to Tits Duntwell. I knew that they were looking for a James Bond. I said, "This guy is great. He already has the suit. And so I really think you should give him a shot." And of course, one thing led to another, and he's a superstar.
Yeah, that's something most laypersons who aren't kind of peripherally attached to Hollywood don't know, is that most of the acting casting discussions and decisions are made around who owns the wardrobes they need.
Yes, exactly.
So if you don't actually own the clothes for the part that you're playing, that you're usually not chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Once you learn that fact, it makes all the sense in the world. But
that's why Adam West was cast as Batman originally,
because he owned a set of full-length Batman pajamas.
Exactly.
And he used that as the first Bat uniform. Fascinating. And I think we might learn a little bit more here with this next question. I read ahead. I hope you don't mind, Mr. Lazenby.
Oh, no, not at all.
This comes from Duncan in Austin, Texas.
Right.
Duncan would like to know, "I was surprised to learn that George Lazenby, famous actor, played a part that was so demanding and so lengthy. I was wondering if there are any other A-list celebs playing parts here in Truman, Indiana, and if so, who they were."
You'd be surprised. A lot of people have passed through here. Sometimes it's veteran actors such as myself. Sometimes actors are discovered, like Daniel Craig. It's just the machine that is a reality TV show, I'm sure you know.
Certainly. Makes sense to me.
Actually, I was gunning for the role of both James Bond and Seymour Millman against Michigan J. Frog. He's the WB Frog. And of course, he already had the tuxedo. He had the whole works. And so we butted heads before. He owns a small shop in town now and everything's fine. But originally, when he was trying out for James Bond, my God-given name is Michigan J. Frog. So I had to change it to George Lazenby, which caused George Lazenby to have to change her name when she was coming up to Julia Roberts. So it's this ripple effect that happens.
So to our listeners who may be a little bit out of the loop, you got a lot of Hollywood insider speak there. I'll try to catch you up to speed. Michigan J. Frog, the singing and dancing frog from Warner Brothers Studios. He, being an animated frog, has his own agent. He does not exist as a cartoon in our real world. I imagine that his animator is kind of standing in as him and then animating him into these scenes where he's running a shop and so on and so forth.
Yes, Jerry Higgins. That's the guy who draws him.
Jerry Higgins, but he operates under the legal entity Michigan J. Frog and represents himself as a series of sketches.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the shop he owns is called Hello My Baby, and it's a cell phone and other digital services shop here in town.
Yes, he also sells ragtag dolls.
He sells ragtag dolls.
Yes, you can send your loved ones a kiss by wire if you so choose, if you happen to have a loved one who is in Truman, Indiana, and you can never see them.
Kiss by Wire, of course, is the tongue-in-cheek name for a sex robot invented here in Truman, Indiana.
That's true. She's been great as a Bond girl for a numerous amount of Bond films.
Many people don't know this, but Halle Berry's parts in her famous role as a Bond girl alongside Pierce Brosnan, actually played by Kiss by Wire.
Mm-hmm. And actually, in my stunt scene that I did rolling down a hill in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, it was a sex robot that was destroyed in that stunt. They realized that they could only do sexually specific stunts and not actually action-oriented stunts.
One of the many reasons why Kiss by Wear 4.0 is the one that works here in Truman. Fascinating stuff, George. You never know who's going to turn up in Truman. And, you know, I have to credit the writers and the directors here, not only for the people they employ in the day-to-day, but for the litany of amazing guest stars that come and go on this set. It really keeps the show fresh.
And it gives people a clean slate, you know, because Ben has no idea what Hollywood is or anything famous is. People who are washed-up celebs can get a new start here, and people can just get their start here in general.
Indeed, it explains the initially suspicious casting in the role of the town chaplain by Gary Busey. At the time, it was a controversial casting choice. America wasn't really on board. But given the room to play and the blank slate to start over, he's really come across as an articulate, wise, and solemn man.
Oh, Gary is great. He did have to have a restraining order against Ben for a number of episodes, but I think that's been lifted.
Yeah, there was that pretty ugly scene in the confession booth where he came through the tiny grated box and began mauling Ben viciously.
He punched through the box because Ben was eating a donut that he wanted.
Hard for us to blame him, if that's the case. Now, Truman, in and of itself, is an amazing feat of construction, urban planning, and set design. But there's one specific area that I'd like to talk about in our next segment called the weekly Where's Vince? So, listeners, the weekly Where's Vince is my favorite segment in which I get to know a particular neighborhood intimately. I spend my whole week there. I get to know the people, the places, and the things. And, of course, this week, I was in Actortown.
Ah, yes, Actortown. How did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it very much. Actortown, of course, is this portion of the city sequestered off from the rest of Truman. It's in sort of an Area 51 type, high fences, electrified, so Ben can't really come near it. It's surreptitiously placed right in the middle of town, so there's regular Truman all around it. But here is where the actors come to unwind, be themselves, kick back, relax, and enjoy life as a normal citizen.
Yes, Actortown is kind of my main haunt when I'm not Seymour Millman. Many actors go there. Of course, a lot of actors have houses in Truman proper. When Ben walks past their houses, they have to be there. But sometimes they can place one of those standees in the window, one of them waving, perhaps, and head over on to Actortown to unwind and get out of character. Because once you're in character for a long time, as you know, I'm sure you've seen Jared Leto prove in the new Joker role, you start to become that character.
I think Jared Leto is currently confined to a veterinary prison in southern Georgia because he can no longer behave as a human being.
Well, because the Joker drinks 2% milk, and he always drank 1% milk, and the people just thought that that was transforming him too much.
Yes, the extra percentage of fat clouded his mind, they say, drove him quite mad. But that ugly business aside, let's talk about life in Actortown.
Yeah, so Actortown is kind of split into two different segments. So one of them is called Camera Row, and every single episode of Been There, Done That starts with a few take-ins of the town, you know, to establish the setting.
Absolutely.
And if you're trying to get your big break, you really want to be in Camera Row because the cameras sweep right down by there. So that's where I told Daniel to hang out. And that's how he was initially discovered on camera. He was waving and also doing that James Bond silhouetted gun thing.
Yeah, he pointed his fingers as if there were a gun right at the camera. Mm-hmm. And then he would yell enthusiastically, bang, bang. Gotcha, you're dead.
And then I was above the camera and I spilled red dye on the camera as he shot it. So it really helped him out. So if you are looking to get your big break, you really want to be in Camera Row. But if you don't want to do anything Ben Davis related or Truman related, you really want to be in Blind Spot. And this is the area where no cameras can see.
Ah, so there's no cameras whatsoever, no wiretaps, no mics. It's completely off the grid.
Exactly. It gives opportunities to actors to be themselves, to engage in illicit and possibly dangerous drug-related activities, and then pop back in over to Truman and resume their everyday lives.
Wow. So you obviously spend a good amount of time here trying to unwind.
I do. There are several people that I like to hang out with. You know, Burt Reynolds is one of them. Michigan J. Frog, we've come to terms and we'll hang out here. But it's a neighborhood that the architect felt was imperative to achieve the best acting quality on camera, is give actors a lives that they can return to off camera.
Interesting. Now, I want to talk about an oft-overlooked section of Actortown, a neighborhood within a neighborhood, if you will, called Extraville.
Yes, Extraville. That's, of course, where all the extras hang out. When they're not on set, of course, that's populated by a lot of the Deliverance actors, as we established. It's populated by really anyone who is background filler characters, or perhaps characters that once were important in Ben's life, who are no longer important. But who still have to be around. Of course, if you aren't friends with someone anymore, you still might run into them, you know? So they are relegated to this extra village.
Yeah, I wandered through what appeared to be a grade school teacher tent city full of Ben's former elementary school mentors.
Yes, they have made the argument several times that you never see your teachers in everyday life. Why do they have to stay there? They're ruining their lives, etc., etc. The architect won't have it. And that he always finds ways, and Tits Dunkwell finds ways of them to run into Ben in everyday situations, whether it be the grocery store or the Cheers bar or Central Perk.
Yeah, it seems that many of them have developed quite an affinity for the Cheers bar.
Some people say that everyone knows their name there, but most people who actually watch the show have long forgotten it.
That's a tragic tale. But it speaks to the sacrifices that each and every one of the actors here are making every day to really create an immersive Ben there, done that experience. For me, the viewer, has Ben ever strayed too close to Actorville?
We have things in place for him not to do that. His father left him at a very young age, and it was said that he hopped the fence of Actorville and was blown up in a nuclear explosion. So we played footage of Dr. Strangelove, and he thinks we actually got the same actor who fell down from the bomb with his cowboy hat. And so we played that, and it really keeps him at bay.
And that same explosion destroyed the billboard at the beginning of Actortown to now just say Actor and then a big crater. And so people often forget whether it's called Actorville or Actortown. Is that correct?
It's very true. And it kind of adds to the allure of the whole area. You know, it's creates a mystery that Ben doesn't really want to get involved in. And we really do our best to try to keep him out of there as much as possible. You know, if he's straying too close to the sign, someone will say, "Oh, remember how your dad died?" And it usually keeps him away for another couple weeks or so.
Yeah, it's always incredible to me the brazen techniques which the architect and the writers on the show will employ to steer Ben away. But so far, they've seemed utterly foolproof. Now, confirm or deny for me, while we're on the topic, the fact that the architect himself has never seen The Truman Show, and was indeed quite put out when he realized that his vision had been done as a fiction by none other than Hollywood's famous funny man, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I think he was pretty peeved about it, but it's just, from what I know, is in his personality to try and do it one better, you know? So he said that he's going to just keep going, and hopefully his goal is that Ben has a child and that he can keep the series running long after Ben is dead. He definitely has reached out to Jim Carrey's people to see if Jim Carrey would ever be on the show, but they haven't heard any response.
Now, before we move on, I do want to take a minute to mention, kind of backing up your statement about doing it one better, in an interview that the architect did behind, of course, a changing curtain for GQ magazine, he said, "I'll never be like those weaklings on The Truman Show. If Ben ever gets close to getting out of the town, I swear to God, I'll kill him. I'll kill him dead."
Yeah, it's one of the rare interviews he had behind that changing curtain. Someone had actually spilled some ketchup on him and he was changing in the process. But other than that, no one's really ever seen him before. He's definitely hinted at killing off Ben if things ever get out of hand. But I think it's just he loves what he does. You know, he loves manipulating this guy into thinking that real life is what it is, when in fact it's a fantasy. So who can blame him for that, you know?
Who indeed? Well, I think legions of protesting human rights activists might disagree, but...
Yes, all those people constantly banging on the dome, we have to also come up with excuses and fibs to tell Ben why there's a constant rumble and shouting going on. We just say that there's Truman, Indiana's in just a weird part of the country where thunder is always happening.
I've also seen you guys bring in a geological survey to talk nebulously about a dormant volcano underneath the town.
Yes, exactly. They couldn't. It was an episode where he was very close to finding one of the protesters because there was a small hole in the dorm, and I actually had to play the geological surveyist, and I didn't have enough time to change, so it was just Seymour Millman, and we had to have this whole backstory where I actually went to geology school and all this.
I remember that episode. I believe Ben immediately bought the idea because Seymour is such a smart guy. No reason to believe he wouldn't have gone to Rock University.
We've had a lot of heart-to-heart talks, Ben and I. I remember recently I was nominated for an Academy Award, even though the Academies are strictly for film and this is a television show. We had a talk on a bench, and he was kind of giving me some guff over a breakup he was going through. And I said, you know, if I asked you about art, you would talk about the Sistine Chapel, but you've never been there and you don't know how it smells. You know, I'm paraphrasing myself right now. If I asked you about war, you would quote me Shakespeare, "Once more into the breach, dear friends, but you've never held your buddy's head in your lap while he takes his last breath." And then I said, "Time's up," because I was also his therapist in that episode. And another time I slammed him against the wall and I said, "You know, it's not your fault. It's not your fault," until he just broke down and he revealed that I was like a father to him. And so that was great.
I had a tear in my eye just remembering that episode, given your monologue. It spawned Ben's famous, never been said anywhere before catchphrase, "I gotta see about a girl."
Yep, we actually have that printed on t-shirts in town too.
I'm wearing one right now. That's how big of a fan I am. Now, I've already learned so much from you, Mr. Lazenby. It seems selfish of me to ask any more of you, but I will all the same. Would you care to join me for our listeners' favorite segment, Did You Know?
Of course.
So listeners, Did You Know is your favorite segment. As we've heard from you in countless SurveyMonkey returns, you love the fact that it's five rapid-fire questions for your busy day on the go. This week is no different. We've got five for you, and I've got the first one. Seymour, a.k.a. Mr. Lazenby, did you know that the only television program ever to beat the Nielsen ratings of Been There, Done That was the season finale of Full House, season four?
Yes, I did know that, and the architect quickly bought the painted ladies from the set and from actual San Francisco, and he flew them over here thinking that that take-in at the beginning boosted ratings. So we have the painted ladies and Truman as well.
And it worked. Just the very next season, Been There, Done That exceeded the Full House season finale, and it hasn't looked back since. It's the most watched program in America.
Well, Charlie here actually sang the theme song to Been There, Done That. How does it go, Charlie?
Oh, yeah, it goes, whatever happened to predictability, the milkman, the paperboy, the evening TV.
Yeah, you know it, Vince, don't you?
Yeah, I think our listeners, too, will know the rest. Thanks again, Charlie, for sticking around. I didn't really remember or realize you were back there.
Oh, I kind of wait in the wings for when George makes a sound that I have to chime in for.
Yeah, it appears to be the case. Well, George, on that note, could you chime in with the next Did You Know?
Sure. Did you know that knives are not allowed in Truman, Indiana?
Why would that be?
Well, there's been problems with the architect coming out at night and trying to murder people who don't exactly do his bidding or follow his direction. This was actually also brought on by me because if I ever see a knife, I might challenge the person at the size of that knife, being an Australian.
Yes, a well-known character quirk of all Australians is whenever you see a knife, you have to fight the urge to either belittle the knife wielder for the size of the knife or find a larger knife yourself.
Exactly. The architect never wants us to break character. And so if there's ever something that is hinting towards that or hinting towards a knife, I really have to just hightail it out of there. I've seen things that are knife shaped before mid conversation with Ben, and I have to run away because if I start lapsing into my Australianism, he will quickly find out I am none other than George Lazenby.
Well, that's fascinating. George, I didn't know that, but did you know that Truman was hit quite hard by the writer's strike of the mid-2000s?
Yes, yes. There were a lot of episodes that was simply Ben kind of moseying about his everyday life, but because we didn't have esteemed Tits Dunkwell writing everything, all the actors decided to hightail it over to Actortown, Actorville, whatever you want to call it. We had to come up with something that Ben would think that a nuclear holocaust would happen. And he thought, you know, his dad was, of course, blown up by an atomic bomb. He thought maybe this was some post-apocalyptic scenario. And finally, the writers came back and we had to reverse engineer and explain ourselves out of that one. So that was an interesting story arc for that season.
Well, it can't be said that the actors aren't flexible. I still remember the haunting sobs of Ben as he lay in the street without human contact for the 71st consecutive day, begging for the sweet release of death to take him, as it has clearly taken all of his friends, family, loved ones, and those he'd ever known or seen.
Well, and a lot of actors on the writer's strike thought that this was going to be their big break to get the hell out of town, you know. And so a lot of people left threatening letters to Ben saying, you know, this is all a farce, you're an idiot. And then when it was pretty awkward when they had to come back, one of them was his mother character. And so that was very awkward.
I believe you guys wrote in that it was some sort of radiation poisoning that made him imagine all of these letters.
Yes, exactly. It was a dream sequence.
And didn't you guys win the Emmy for Best Dramatic Scene for the portion where Ben is fruitlessly trying to stab himself to death with a fork because there are no knives in the town?
Yeah, we thought that was sort of a poetic justice type of scene. And of course, the architect won the Emmy for that one, and he was not able to attend because no one can see or hear him. And so I accepted the Emmy on his behalf. He wanted me not to, but I insisted that I would.
That's just the type of man you are, Mr. Lazenby. Exactly. Speaking of which, do you have a did you know fact for us?
Yes, did you know that there's one show that Ben can watch in Truman, Indiana?
What is that?
It's QVC. So it's on at all hours of the day, and Lori from Shark Tank has bought exclusive rights to Truman, Indiana, because nobody watches QVC anyway. And so we think that it's not hurting anyone to show him, you know, Antiques Roadshow stuff or maybe ShamWow or different products that you can buy on QVC.
That's fascinating. And it explains my final did you know. Did you know that Truman, Indiana has more ShamWows per capita than any other city, not only in the country, but in the world?
Well, you know, they wet as they dry, and so it's just the economical choice, really.
By no strange twist of fate, Truman, Indiana has the fewest conventional mops per capita.
Yes, that's true. When we signed the deal with the ShamWow guy, we also gave him a job as an extra because of all of his illicit doings. No one else would hire him, so he's an extra, and he also gets money from the constant use of ShamWow in town. But he said, no, we got to do without the mops, which caused quite a problem because for a long time, extras were just mops with Google eyes on them. And so a lot of Ben's closest friends had to be written out of the show that way. There was, I think his name was Joe Jenkins, and he was just a mop who Ben shared a lot of personal secrets with all throughout grade school, and he had to leave.
That scene still haunts me to this day.
I think that also won either an Academy Award or an Emmy. I forget which one.
I think that was actually a daytime non-musical Tony that it won.
Ah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Well, George, it saddens me that much unlike Ben There Done That, our time together must come to an end. You've been so generous with your time. And allow me again for the third and final time to praise you not only for your work as, of course, the finest James Bond ever take the stage, but also as Seymour here on Been There, Done That. You've done an immaculate job, and I hope many more continued awards and seasons for you all.
Well, let me thank you as first George Lazenby and also as Seymour Millman.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Hopefully, same is true of you, the listener. And in case you needed just a cherry on top of a Sunday of an episode, I've got one for you in the form of our final segment, Wish You Were Here. So listeners, each and every week, we wish you could join us. This week in particular, I'm just a little bit lonely, missing my partner in crime, my co-star, Elliot McNally. But since you can't, we've got the next best thing, an audio postcard from us to you. It goes a little something like this. Dear listener, wish you were here in Truman, Indiana, a town fabricated to be the setting of a reality TV show of which the star is an unknowing participant, home to many actors, be they discovered here like Daniel Craig, old regulars like Burt Reynolds, or even the indomitable George Lazenby. A town where things are not always as they appear, but they always appear to be great.
Farewell from these parts to yours. Hey guys, thanks for joining Vince this week. Join me next week when I'm in Paleo, Pennsylvania.
Paleo, Pennsylvania is the birthplace of the paleo diet and home to what is purported to be the missing link that archaeologists flock to research and marketers flock to in order to hawk products. Sounds like it's going to be a great one. I wouldn't miss it if I were you.